Last week, I had some great news to share with you, but I wasn't able to because I went right into my sermon. But this week, I want to share, get to introduce. Many of you know, but my oldest daughter, Riley, she got engaged to a feller a couple weeks ago. And so we are very happy for her. And Spencer, we love Spencer. We've been praying for him for a long time that God bring the right man into her life, and he's just he's very special, and so we're excited about what the future holds for them, and I'm getting excited. Still getting used to it, to be honest, as a dad, still getting used to it. I'm getting there, getting excited, but God's blessed us, so we're so thankful for that. Hey, this morning, we're back in the First Samuel today. We're in three chapters, so don't worry. Don't get freaked out. That doesn't mean three different sermons. This is one story kind of goes over three chapters. And so this morning, we're going to be looking at like 18, 19, and 20 in First Samuel. I'll get it straight one of these days. First Samuel. But I want to start by back in 2009. You know, some of you guys might not have been born yet, but back in 2009, the Whopper. Anybody like Burger King?
Yeah.
You know, I'm at the age now where I'm trying to give up processed food, but every once in a while, a hamburger sounds good, like a fast food burger. And I have to say, I like me a double cheese Whopper. You know, they charge you like a buck extra for a cheese, but it's worth it. Get the cheese, it's always worth it. Double Whopper, you know, can't beat it. So back in 2009, Burger King did this Facebook campaign, an ad. And the ad was called a Whopper Sacrifice. Doesn't that sound intriguing? And this ad offered a coupon, and we have the ad for you. It's a coupon for a free Whopper to anyone who would unfriend 10 of their Facebook friends. Ain't that funny? I'm like, yeah, I can think of 10 I could let go for a free Whopper, right? I mean, someone, everybody can relate, right? And so the way it worked was if you unfriend somebody in the app, it would send a message or put a message on your wall that to the person you deleted, it said, you've been sacrificed for a Whopper. Like, that's great, right? I mean, that's awesome. That's a great campaign. I'm like, that's perfect, you know? Thank you, Burger King, for making our world a little brighter place to live in. But what happened was, if you follow the story out, New York Times did a piece on this, and everybody was stunned to learn that within the first week, 233,906 friendships had been terminated because of Burger King. And that meant Burger King was on the hook for 23,000 free Whoppers. So immediately they canceled the ad campaign. Like, it's over. You guys are crazy. We're not doing it no more, right? Now, we all know Facebook friends are not real, right? But, come on. But I do think the success of the ad highlights a genuine issue in our culture that friendship is not much of a highly valued commodity anymore. I mean, think about it. We have hundreds of friends on Facebook, right? But yet I knew them at one point, or I knew of them at one point, or I like my second, third cousin's brother was married at one point to their third, fourth, fifth cousin, and it's like, you could sacrifice some friends on Facebook and not even notice, right? Because what's happening in our world, and we brought this culture into a church and in our Christian the beliefs and our Christian way of doing things, is we've got this surface friendship. And I think we all do it. It's almost like what we call like a Sunday friendship. What's a Sunday friendship? How you doing? Good. It's like talking to a teenager, right? And then you ask me how I'm doing. I say, good. And boom. That was awesome, wasn't it? I mean, that was an in-depth conversation. That was a Sunday relationship. And we live off a lot of those. And so today we're going to take a look at maybe one of the greatest friendship stories of all time. And it shows us not only why friendships are important, but how to go deep in developing them. And this is really important for guys. It applies to all of us, especially guys. Guys, we can spend hours upon hours with each other and not talk about anything, right? And we understand that. So we're going to learn some things today. We're going to start in verse 1 of chapter 18. It says, as soon as he finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And literally in the Hebrew, that knit is meant together in spirit is what they're talking here. Verse 3, then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. I'll pause right there, because here's a remarkable thing about this. In normal circumstances, who would have been king after Saul? Jonathan. That's just his son, right? Normally, okay, Saul dies, it's going to be Jonathan, right? So that would be normal, okay? But Jonathan recognized that God has chosen David to be the next king. And without the slightest hint of jealousy or resentment, Jonathan gives him his garments to David. We continue in verse 5. It says, David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him. So Saul sent him over the men of war. And this was good in sight of all the people and also in sight of Saul's servants. And as they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistines, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines and songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated. Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry at this, saying displeased him, and said, they have ascribed to David tens of thousands, and to me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can have been done, have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. Really funny, real pause real quick. This was not an insult. The way the Hebrew poetry is written, this was not an insult. They were actually honoring Saul by putting him first and David second. So there's a whole thing to this. So it kind of helps you play into the mind of Saul right now, what's going on here. So I'm going to jumping forward to chapter 19, verse 8 says, there was war again. David went out and fought the Philistines and struck them with great blow so that they fled before him. Then a harmful spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing the lyre. And Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he eluded Saul. So he struck the spear into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. So if you read the story, you're familiar with it. Saul eventually cools down. David comes back. Next few chapters, Saul tries to kill him four more times, tries to wipe David out. Saul's up, Saul's down. One day he's up on David, one day he's down to David. Next time he turns him into a dartboard, right? This is their relationship. When Saul goes into one of his murderous rages, Jonathan steps in, pleads for David's life with his dad, saying, Dad, what's David ever done to you? You don't have a better friend in Israel in this kingdom than David. Saul gets so mad at him, he throws his own spear at his own son. I mean, it's crazy. He flips out, and it goes on. This happens five times. Fifth time, David ran away, and nobody knew. At this point, they're finally wising up and like, all right, is he calm? Is he not calm? So they're trying to devise a plan. So they come up with a plan and said, all right, this is how it's going to work, okay? We're going to know for sure. So what we're going to happen, there's a banquet coming up, a monthly banquet. Saul has all his generals. David's supposed to be there. So Jonathan's like, David, don't come. We'll say you had a family emergency. We'll see how dad reacts. Okay, boom. They do this. Sure enough, banquet comes. David's at a family emergency. Saul blows up. Okay, we know, now we know, he's not happy. Okay, so then they have their answer. Saul wants to kill David. Jonathan goes out to David, who's hiding in the woods, and they've got this signal range. Pretty cool signal, especially if you're in the archery. So Jonathan shoots some arrows in the field, and his servant goes and gets them. He tells his servant boy, okay, their arrows are beyond you. David's still in danger. There's in front of you, David's safe. So he shoots the arrows, and the servant goes after and gets them. He yells at the servant, the arrows are way beyond you. And so that's like the huge red flag, right? You're in mortal danger. Okay, we know. Then we catch up to the story in verse 41. It says, as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face on the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another. David wept the most. Then Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in his name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between you and me and between my offspring and your offspring forever. And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. This morning, what I want to talk to you about is what biblical friendship looks like. I know this is a little different. I know this is probably not what a lot of people are expecting, but I want you to understand what biblical friendship looks like, because I think a lot of us are missing out on this. And a lot of us are missing out of it because one very important point that we're going to hit at the very end. But let's look at what biblical friendship is. It's true friendship. Maybe some more than anyone else in the Bible, Jonathan demonstrated true friendship. Okay, but what is true friendship? Well, it starts with selfless love. Okay, starts right there, selfless love. Jonathan loved David as his own soul. Even though David inherited, in other circumstances, what would have rightly come to Jonathan. I mean, that's a pretty selfless act if I don't say so myself. This was supposed to be David's. I mean, how easy would it have been to Jonathan to get jealous? Every indication Jonathan hasn't done anything wrong. His family lost the throne because dad sinned, not him. It'd been very tempting at this point in the story for Jonathan to say, "That's not fair, God. Come on, we've been there." But that wasn't Jonathan. Jonathan respected what God had appointed and genuinely loved David. So let me ask you this morning, how jealous are you of those you call your friend? Are you secretly resentful when some blessing comes in their lives? Well, that's not fair, God. That should have been mine. Like, I've been waiting all this time for that. When they get the boyfriend, when they get the position, when they get the promotion, when they get the good grade, or they get the recognition. Are you resentful? Like, well, God, that was my, I put in the work for that. Like, that's supposed to be me. I'm supposed to have the house. I'm supposed to have the 2.5 kids. I'm supposed to have the... And when it doesn't happen to us, the resentment sets in. We resent, like, why do they have so much money? Did you know they're going on the fifth cruise this year? I'm stuck riding the tractor out in the field. I mean, what in the world? That's not fair, God. Why are their kids excelling at school? Why are their kids getting the scholarships? And all we can do is we can sit back and think, God, why not me? They're not better than me. Biblical friendship is selfless. Be like Jonathan, where Jonathan's like, yeah, that's supposed to be mine, but I know God's got a plan. This is God's plan. So we're going to be happy when they got the promotion. That should have been ours. We're going to be happy when they get the relationship that we long for. We're going to be happy. True friendship is selfless. It rejoices in a blessing your friend gets. Even when those blessings you like to have for yourself, you're going to rejoice in them because you're their friend. You're happy they got what they got. You're happy they got the promotion. You're happy. That's selflessness. Another characteristic of true friendship is intentionality. Intentionality. Guys don't like intentionality. We'll get to that in a second. But Jonathan and David... were not two companions brought together by happenstance of life. They weren't work colleagues. They weren't golf buddies. I mean, I'm sure they enjoyed spending time with each other. But they made a covenant. Did you catch that part? They made a covenant. In the Hebrew, that's an extremely weighty word. They made a covenant with each other that to look after each other, even the offspring. That means more than just being around each other, by the way. It means getting involved. It means choosing to be involved. Choosing to be intentional. Man, we have perfected this category of friendship where what we do is we golf, we hunt, we watch sports together, and that's it. Come on. Women tend to do better than this, but guys get together for hours, and we never talk about anything of substance. Am I right or am I wrong? You guys ever heard Brian Regan did a bit on this? He did a bit where he had a conversation with his wife that One day, you know, he has this friend who got divorced. He went golfing with him for the first time since their divorce, right? And this is the bit. This is what he says. He says, so when I get home, my wife's like, hey, how's Gary coping with the divorce? Brian's like, fine, I guess. His wife's like, well, I thought you went golfing with Gary today. I did. And you don't know how he's doing with the divorce? It never came up. She's like, is he dating anyone? I don't know. She's like, were you two in the same golf cart? Yes. So you're telling me you're in the same golf cart for 4 hours and you don't know if he's dating anyone? No, I know he's got a great new driver. And she's like, how is it possible that how Gary's doing would not come up? He said, how is it possible that it come up? And what do we do? We're at the 150 mark. Yeah, it's probably playing 137. Oh, by the way, you date anybody? It doesn't come up. But biblical friendship takes intentionality. Even with us guys who don't usually, we're not usually intentional when it comes to our friendships, our relationships. We want to know what's new in your life. What we mean by that is, did you get a new bow? Did you get a new gun? That's what we mean. By being intentional, what we mean now by being intentional is, hey, how are you doing? Good. No, man, like, how you doing? It freaked them out at first when you start pushing a little bit. Like, oh, I'm getting a little comfortable by that. What do you mean? Had a pastor friend call me just the other day. It was great. He's like, hey, I just want to apologize. I haven't called you since your accident. I want to see how you're doing. I'm like, oh, I'm doing good. He said, really? I said, no, really. He said, okay, because when I had this, I really went through a low point. I said, yeah. And so it was a great conversation. But it wouldn't happen unless he was intentional. Because, again, we like this Sunday relationship. How you doing? Good. How you doing? Good. Okay. Although below the surface, you're falling apart. Below the surface, your marriage is falling apart. Below the surface, you're financially wrecked. Below the surface, you got all this stuff, but we're good. That's why a biblical friendship takes intentionality on your part. Another characteristic of true friendship is committing to speak the truth. Jonathan told David the hard things, the things that were awkward, the things David didn't want to hear. A true friend thinks about your safety and your flourishing more than your comfort. And they're committed to telling the truth even when it hurts, even when you don't want to hear it. All you Cowboy fans are all hyped up because you won a preseason game. I'm just going to tell you the truth, okay? Your team stinks. They're not going anywhere this year. They won one game, but they're not going nowhere. Okay? I don't want to tell you the hard truth this morning. The hard truth of, hey, you allow some things in your life that I don't think is going to work out good for you. The hard truth, hey, you're spending a lot more time over here than you are with your spouse. I don't think it's going to work out good for you. The hard truths that you don't want to hear, but they're a friend enough to tell you you need to hear them. So true friendship consists of selfless love, intentionality, and a commitment to speak the truth. It leads me to a second thing. Let's look at the importance of friendship. There are several things that this friendship provided for David, and it's all true for you and I. The first thing is this: it provides a shield for us. It provided a shield for David. Jonathan alerted David to danger that David was unaware of. Jonathan saw things coming that David couldn't. I love this verse in Ecclesiastes 4:9. It says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can anyone keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not easily broken. We know this. Together is better. And that's partially because our friends see dangers in our life that we don't see. Right? We got blinders on when it comes to our own lives, but our friends are one step outside of our lives. They see things coming our way that we need to be aware of. They see some choices we might be making. And we say, hey, that's not going to turn out good for you. And they can warn us about that. Listen, the definition of a blind spot is something you can't see because you're blind to it. Hello? That's where a true friend comes. That's why we need these friendships in our life. If you knew about it, it wouldn't be a blind spot. But your friends can see this. Often blind spots are in our own heart. Proverbs 18:1 says, whoever isolates himself seeks his own desires. He breaks out against all sound judgment. I love this verse. Look at that. Whoever isolates himself seeks his own desires. You know what that means? Whenever you start getting this fear, anxiety, and the what ifs, you know, the what if this happened, what if this, and what happens is we retreat to our own mind. We retreat, we want to be alone with our own desires, our own thoughts. And I think this really is showing us what Saul happened to Saul. He started thinking about all the anxieties, all these fears, all these worries, and he breaks out against all sound judgment. Because when we start isolating ourselves, we start letting that grow in the darkness, so fears grow in anxiety, fear in the darkness. And when it comes to light, we think, okay, we know what to do. But we break out against all sound judgment. When you isolate yourself, your selfish heart deforms and begins to grow unchecked. And you could actually say that Proverbs 18, paraphrased, things grow in secret garden, always grow mutated. Because we give everything in dark bigger than it was, don't we? Like this morning, I let the dog out at like 5:30 this morning. It's dark, right? And I hear something out in the shed. Something makes a loud bang. I'm like, okay, that's not a squirrel. Like, do I want to know what that is? You know, your mind just starts growing. Like, is it our dog? Is it, I don't know. Coyote, we got a lot of coyotes out there. I don't know. But in darkness, things grow, doesn't it? And that's where the friendship comes into play. Those friends can shield us. Second way it comes into play is it strengthened David. That Jonathan's friendship strengthened David. Jonathan spoke courage into David's life when David was ready to give up. He reminded David that God had great plans for his life, even when David's world seemed to be collapsing around him. Listen, true friendship multiplies your strength. God designed it to work that way. God designed us to be in community with each other. That's how God worked even before the earth was created. He was in community. Genesis chapter 1, he starts community. You see that all throughout Scripture. That's how we were designed to work. Do you know that one of the strongest horse can pull 5,000 pounds? I mean, that's crazy. Okay, so if you put two horses together, that means they can pull 10,000 pounds. No, they can actually pull 14,000 pounds. It multiplies. Putting two horses don't just double, it multiplies. God made it so that our strength multiplies when we pull together with a friend. I don't know about you, but knowing somebody else is grieving my problem, my worry about it with me, it tends to make my soul feel a lot lighter. I mean, have you experienced that? Close friendships, the sustain and strengthen us? Craig Groeschel, a megachurch pastor, he said that the saying everybody says, right? Show me your friends, I'll show you your future, right? You've heard that before. But he takes it a step further. He says you become the average of your five closest friends. Let me give you a second to dwell on that. Some of you are like, well, that's depressing. What would your five closest friends, average amount, what does that look like? The good news is that if you want to change your future, not so where to start, there's an actionable step for you. Change your closest friends. So listen, friendships are important because they shield us, they strengthen us, they shape us. That's how God designed us. Men, that's how God designed us, not to do this alone. And I'll say it again, it should disturb us how little value we seem to place on friendships in our culture, and how few friends we have, even in the church, particularly as we get older. Remember Proverbs 18:1, isolated man seeks his own desire and rages against all sound judgment. I think some of you should highlight that verse. All right, the final thing, I want the worship team to come on up. So I've talked a lot about friendship. I know some of you have already tuned me out. You're like, this is the stupidest sermon I've ever heard. Okay, whatever, but now's the part where you tune back in, okay? Because I really want to challenge you on biblical friendships. I'm telling you, the world is getting such that I don't think we will be able to survive unless you got true biblical friendships in your life. But the third thing I want us to look at is the power behind friendships. And this is where I think, why I think a lot of us have just surface friendships, but we've never went anywhere with them. This is why, because we never looked at the power behind friendships. Because if you don't have the power that's behind a true biblical friendship, you can't have the type of friendship that we've talked about today. Listen, Jesus should be the base of every friendship. Friendship is inspired by Jesus. Think about it. Jonathan served even at great personal cost to himself. When David was in need, it says Jonathan walked 30 miles to warn him danger's coming. How many know Jesus came a lot farther than that? He crossed the gap between eternity, between earth, between deity and humanity. We see in our story that Jonathan gave up his right place in a palace to put David in. We know by the stories that Jesus purchased our place in a palace at the cost of his blood. Jonathan was not the rightful heir to the throne, but Jesus was and still willingly gave it up. Listen, if you haven't learned by now in our Old Testament studies, it always points back to Jesus. Like Jonathan, Jesus laid aside his royal robe. He took off his belt. He took off his sword. Gave them to us. Even though he was a rightful heir. And then we turned our back on him and betrayed him. He refused to walk away from us. Even when he had every right to. What a friend. What a friend. Here's the power behind it. Jesus' friendship enables you to be this kind of friend. So how can you be this kind of friend we see in 1 Samuel? You've got to be overwhelmed with the friendship of Jesus. Because Jesus gave his own life, his sword, his robe, that you could be saved. In doing so, he transformed you. It has to start there. He has to be that friend to you. And if he hasn't been that friend to you, you can't do that to anybody else. Because some of you don't even think of it that way. You think of miracles. You think of Sunday worship. You don't think Jesus is your friend. I mean, he's God, yeah, but is he friend? And since you don't have that type of relationship with Jesus, you can't have that, the relationship we talked about today, you can't have that with others. About this? What about when your friends disappoint you? When you feel the need of a friend, but they just let you down? Well, we all feel that, right? In Psalms, David reveals multiple times when a friend or close family member disappointed him. Psalm 55, look at it with us this morning. David wrote this, and he said, "It is not an enemy who taunts me. I could bear that. It's not my foes so arrogantly insult me. I could have hidden from them. But look at verse 13. Instead, it's you, my equal, my companion, my close friend." They were saying it was a friend that betrayed me. Maybe you've been through that. Few things are worse than a friend betraying you. Maybe they didn't call when they should have called. Maybe they didn't reach out. Maybe they were so preoccupied that they didn't seem to notice that you were hurting. We've all experienced that. Every earthly friend disappoints, even the good ones like Jonathan. This is where we know we can lean on Jesus. Not as an example of a friend, but as an actual friend. A friend who Scripture says in Proverbs 18:24, sticks closer than a brother. Because this friend was not only there for us, he sympathized with our pain. He took our place. He shielded us. He strengthened us. He sustains us. He shapes us when all others will fail. We have to get this right. This relationship with Jesus has to be right before you have all these other relationships. Experience and friendship with Him enables us to be healthy, complete, not needy, forgiving. Would you stand with us? Forgive a friend who's hurt you because you're so needy. You're always nursing how others let you down. That's why you can't be a good friend. Ever heard that? Hurting people hurt people? Listen, your woundedness from past relationship makes you a bad friend to others. You won't get past it until you get this relationship with Jesus right. It has to come first. See, we find completeness, we find healing in Jesus. We find satisfaction in Jesus. That's why we can be happy with those getting what we want. Except we found all this in Jesus. See, then we can rejoice with them. We can be happy. We can celebrate with them. But today is the day for you to make an intentional choice to pursue biblical friendships. Today's the day for you to choose Jesus as King. What that means? You have to give up your claim to the throne. There can only be one king. Who will it be? I hate for you to leave here thinking about how to make better friends, but still being disconnected from Jesus. Because it doesn't work. I'm telling you, that's the whole main point of this story. Because I'm connected with Jesus. I know in Jesus, I find my happiness, I find my security, I find my identity in Jesus. I have all those things. That's why I can be a great friend to all those around me. Because I'm not searching for those things in them. They don't. That's why I can be happy for them. I can celebrate their wins, their successes. I'm telling you this morning, we're not meant to do this life alone. Day one, it's always been about community and friendships. I know I've been talking to guys a lot, but women, you guys are good at this surface relationships too. If we want to be successful in this life as believers, we got to surround ourselves with men and women who love God. Why? Because then they can celebrate with me when God blesses me. Then I can go to them when I'm hurting and I know they'll lift me up in the Lord in prayer. I know I can go to them and they'll help carry my burden. I know I'm not alone. Listen, what grows in darkness is never good. Gotta have that friend. But it starts with Jesus. Bow your heads with me this morning. Dear Father, Lord, I pray this morning. God, I pray, God, that we examine our hearts this morning. God, in the first place I'm going to start this morning is my relationship with you. Are you that friend to me this morning? Have I made you that friend? Or have I just viewed you as some hands-off God that just hands out punishment? Oh, Lord, I pray this morning. Jesus, I pray that we see you as a friend. The best friend. The friend who celebrates with us. the friend who dries our tears, a friend who gives us confidence. The friend who never leaves our side. Lord, we start there this morning, God. We need a friend, and God, we're turning to you to be that friend this morning. The friend who brings me happiness, who gives me my identity, who gives me my security. Lord, I'm looking to you for those things. So, Lord, I'm going to get that first, and I'm going to get that right. Father, today I'm going to commit to biblical friendships in my life. God, I'm going to commit to being that to somebody. I'm going to commit searching that out in my own life. Lord, I want people in my life that I can be intentional with. I want people in my life I can share my hurts with. People I know that will take these same hurts to the throne room of heaven for. The friendship it should be. That's where we start. That's where we start. Maybe you've gotten swept up in making it more of about religion instead of relationship. Today it's just about relationship. He wants to be those things in your life. He wants to bring the happiness, the identity, security in your life. Today, would you let him be that to you? Would you experience him as a friend this morning? Would you come to the altar this morning and say, Lord, I've seen you as God. I viewed you as the Almighty. I view you, but I've never let you be that friend. Today, I want to start by that. If that's you, would you come? You won't be alone. There'll be people to pray with you, I promise you. You just want to establish Jesus as your friend. The one who will never leave your side. The one who's been tempted, who's been hurt, so he knows what you're going through. He knows exactly what you're going through. Would you let him be that to you? Would you let him be your friend this morning? And secondly, this morning, if you're in here, you're a surface friend. All you have in your life is surface friends. Would you commit to changing that today? Would you commit in your heart searching out friends that you can have a biblical relationship with? A biblical friendship. You look out for them. You speak the truth in their lives. You bring encouragement. You lift them up. Would you commit to being that for somebody this morning? I want the worship team to lead us in a song. As they lead us, would you commit to that this morning? Commit to one, you're going to establish Jesus as the Lord of your heart. And his friendship is going to set the example for everything else. And two, you're going to be an example of a biblical relationship to all those around you. Would you join us in worship this morning?